Title of my sermon today is Peaceful Disruption. All of the titles, you will see a theme running through Advent because we are studying in Sunday school the book Holy Disruption by Tracy Dobb. And the idea of the book is that it imagines what it would be like if the only gospel we had of Jesus was the gospel of Mark, which, if you're familiar with Mark, has no birth story of Jesus, has no telling of Jesus as a child or a young adult. In fact, we read the very first verses out of Mark this morning, or rather, Carol read the very first verses out of Mark this morning, and they begin with, not with Jesus, but with a fully grown John the Baptist in the wilderness, and the first time we see Jesus appear is when he comes to be baptized by John. And what's interesting, I think, is that Mark begins with John the Baptist because John the Baptist sort of sets this foundation. John the Baptist is doing this thing that nobody had ever done before. He's doing this really radical, new kind of way of being. And what Jesus does is Jesus sees this and kind of takes what John the Baptist is doing and makes it more accessible and makes it more prevalent throughout the land. And it kind of reminds me of like any kind of great musical form when it first kind of comes onto the scene. There is, you know, it is strange, it is new, it is different, and there's always kind of one pioneer, somebody who is really kind of pushing the envelope and doing things that have never been done before. But then somebody else will come along and kind of see what they're doing and build on it, and not necessarily weaken it, but change it in such a way that it's more prevalent and easier to hang on to. If you don't believe me, you might have heard of a little band known as the Beatles. Anybody ever heard of the Beatles? You guys remember the Beatles, right? They were big once, I hear. Big. They came on and it seemed like they came out of nowhere, right? But the things that they were building on was kind of this form of rhythm and blues and soul that had been prevalent and kind of coming through Liverpool at that time from a lot of different artists and from America. And so what they did is they took that and they kind of polished it and made it accessible, and certainly they made it prevalent throughout. So the thing that I want to focus on today that John was doing, he's doing a lot of different things, but what he was really trying to do and kind of what it all centers around is this idea of peace, which is the theme of today. Now, you might not think of John as a peaceful person because he's often characterized as this wild man who wore camel's hair and ate locusts and honey and lived in the desert and was just kind of crazy. But the reason that he was doing all of this was that he was trying to build a peace that was greater and more sustainable than the peace people were lacking in the big city and kind of the modern day world at the time. He was creating his own community and his own little utopia. And I think that if we look at the way that John did and then what Jesus takes from that, we can see that this peace was manifested in three different ways. The first was personal, the second was social, and the third was structural. Personal, social, and structural. The first peace was personal. Now, whenever I think of personal peace, it reminds me of this story that I had when I was in high school. And I used to have this little devotional called The Secret Place. If you've ever heard of The Secret Place, it's a daily devotional my church gave out, and so I would read that every day. And one night, before I did my devotional, I was really upset. I was just struggling. I didn't know. I was really having a hard time, and everything felt like really difficult. And I stopped and I prayed and I said, I just need a personal peace. I just know that if I can be okay with myself, I'll be able to be okay with everything else. So what I need is a personal peace. Amen. And then I went into my bedroom, and right before bed, I opened up my devotional, and the title of my devotional for that day was Personal Peace. So, I mean, if you don't think God's listening, and that God has a sense of humor. But that's kind of what we're getting at here. And with John, he met people on a personal level. He wasn't baptizing people all at once in big groups. Everybody go down and come back up again. No, he was bringing people in individually. Each person came with their own sense of sinfulness, if you call it that, or struggle, or need, or lacking, and wanted something different, wanted to live life in a new way. And for that person, he would individually baptize them. And each individual was personally baptized, all the way up to the point where Jesus was individually and personally baptized by John. And what Jesus takes from this is an attention to the personal. The attention to that people cannot have peace if their needs are not met on an individual level. So that's why he did things like feed them. If these people are hungry, give them something to eat. You give them something to eat. That's why he did things like heal them. They are too sick, too infirm to be able to do anything, to grasp this ideas that he was sharing. He would heal them as a way of showing them what they could do. And Mark is replete with this Jesus casting out demons. This is something that comes up again and again in Mark. And whenever these things of demons come up, it's always kind of tricky because it's unclear what exactly we're talking about. Are we talking about evil spiritual forces like that you might see from a Dante's Inferno? Or are we talking about people who had mental illnesses and were characterized by having demons within them? Or were these just struggles that people were having that they couldn't get past? And they were referring to them as demons. But whatever the case was, they were preventing these people from wholly being who they were, from truly being themselves. And so Jesus takes that away so they can be whole. They can be themselves. And in that sense, I think that we all have demons today. Your demons might even just be the thoughts that you have, the negative things that you tell yourself could be considered your own personal demons. And so, with prayer, with requesting, and with believing, those things also can be taken away so that we can be who we were meant to be, who God sees us as, who Jesus sees us as. And so before getting any further, Jesus attended to people on a personal level. Now the second part of the peace that John brought was a social peace. And John did this by creating community, creating communities of support. And Jesus saw this. And what John did out in the wilderness, Jesus sought to do back in the city, back in the synagogues, back in the places where people were already being social. There is one story of Jesus where he goes into a synagogue. We talked a little bit about it in Sunday school this morning. And somebody within that synagogue had a withered hand. And he looks to the religious leaders and he asks them, what's better to do on the Sabbath? Is it better to do good on the Sabbath or to do evil on the Sabbath? And nobody answered him. Seems like a pretty simple question, right? What should you do? At church, should you do good things at church or should you do awful and horrible, harmful things at church? And the people didn't answer because they didn't want to be judged. They didn't want them to, and they didn't want to condone what they knew Jesus was going to do, which was heal this man, because healing was a profession. And to do work, do your profession on the Sabbath was forbidden by law. It was only allowed to do in cases of life and death. But Jesus tried to make them reconsider, tried to make them rethink this. And of course, he heals this man. And what the in our book, what Tracy Dobb makes very clear is that not only does it heal, not only does this affect him on a personal level, like we just talked about, but it also restores him on a social level. Because people who were sick, people who were infirmed, people who had different ailments, they were considered to be unclean. And they couldn't participate in the temple rites. They couldn't enter the temple, so they could not be part of that community. And so by healing, Jesus not only restores his peace on a personal level, but also on a social level, restoring that community. And I love this community because this community is all about welcome. And it is all about welcome. Everybody who comes in here is welcome to be here, is embraced. But I think we can even extend that welcome out further. By inviting people in, by letting people know, no, this is, I know it's church and it's church, but it's not that kind of church. It's the kind of church where you are embraced and you are welcome. But you don't have to be here to practice this kind of welcome. You don't have to be here to create social peace. You can create it where you work. Wherever you see exclusion, wherever you see people being left out, wherever you see people being others or ostracized, and you bring them into the larger community, you include them into the larger group, you are creating a social peace. And the last point, the last form of peace that John was making was that of a structural peace. So John goes out into the wilderness. And this is one way of dealing with unjust structures, is just leave them behind. Don't even be a part of it. I know that there are often people, you see different people who are going to live off the grid. They don't want any part of all of the structures that are in place because one person is benefiting by the other person's oppression or vice versa. And they just want to abandon it all. And this is what John did. John looked at these structures and saw how unjust they were. Saw how corrupt Herod and the people in that court were, spoke up against it. And that eventually was his undoing, which got him arrested and then killed. But Jesus also saw that these structures were unsustainable. And he thought, I don't think that it's good enough for us just to leave them behind, just to go live out off the grid somewhere. We need to make changes within these structures. We need to change the structures themselves so that the structures can bring about peace. Now, the main structure that they were dealing with was this structure of empire, right? There was this little thorn in the side of the Jewish people known as the Roman Empire, which, of course, was much bigger than a thorn in their side. And many felt that the only way that they would be able to have true peace was if they were strong enough to be able to defeat the Roman Empire and to take back what was theirs, which was the land and the temple, Jerusalem, some areas that they had once held. But Jesus saw something greater than that. He said that this fight over this land is going to continue, and indeed, it is still continuing. that if one empire comes in and displaces another, it's just a matter of time before another empire is going to want to come in and displace that one. That these things happened over and over again, from Israel to Assyria to Persian to Greece to Rome. And at no point was there true peace. So Jesus saw that there was a different way. He said that we need to create peace within the structures themselves. That it's not as important who owns the land as to how they are owning this, how their structures are caring for others, how their structures are helping the people in need. It goes back to this Hebrew word that the prophets used, shalom. And shalom is a Hebrew word that we don't really have an English equivalent. Shalom is often most easily and quickly translated as peace, but it is something so much greater than peace. Tracy Dobb, in the book that we're reading, she describes it as this way. She says, shalom included the presence of justice and economic well-being for all. True peace was not possible where there was hunger or neglect, great disparities of wealth, or indifference to human suffering. If all of these things were eradicated, if there was not a disparity of wealth, if the people were cared for, if everyone if there was suffering was addressed, and humans were caring for each other, then and only then would there be shalom. So what structures do we see that are unjust? What empires do we see at play in our world? Be they political or economic or social. Think of Jesus in the temple upsetting all of those who were trying to cheat others out of their money, trying to take advantage of people who were in a really difficult situation. A lot of people had come from far away places and needed a sacrifice to give at the temple. And so the people were all willing to sell them this dove or animal that they needed to sacrifice, but it was going to cost them. Exploiting people for their needs is not something that we can blame on modern day capitalism or consumerism. It is something that has happened for millennia. And as we come into this time of Christmas and gifts, and I'm not opposed to gifts. I'm not opposed to gift giving. I give a lot of gifts myself. But I really thought about gifts. And I thought about, what is it that people really need? I'm not talking about the kids, but people that you give gifts, what is it that they really need? And one of the things that I hear people really need is time and space and quiet. I wonder if there's a way to give people that for Christmas. My dad is not much of a materials person. He's the kind of person who would buy a pair of jeans and then expect to wear that pair of jeans for the rest of his life. I remember every time he went and bought a new pair of jeans, he would buy them like two at a time. And every time he went and bought two new pairs of jeans, it was like a big deal. Well, his old jeans have these holes in them and they're ripped through, so he's going to go buy some new jeans. And it was like, oh my goodness, it's an event. My mom often will talk about how my father would just go into a cabinet one day and just throw everything out of the cabinet. We don't use anything in here, and just throw it all out. But I do remember one time I was looking for something in his office, envelope or something I needed, and I opened up one of his drawers. And in that drawer was every card I had ever made him as a kid or sent him from college. He kept every single one, and they were not good. Oftentimes, I was a smart alecky kid, and I would try to find the most like silliest birthday card I could find when I buy one. And when I made them, they were even worse. But he kept the gifts, and it's not because, you know, the gifts were that great, but it's because it was that he knew that I was thinking of him. And he would look at those gifts, he would look at those cards from time to time and know that I was thinking of him, and then he would then be thinking of me, thinking of him. And I think that that is really all that we can ask for a gift. So all of these things take disruption, right? Leaving things just as they are, leaving the status quo just as it is not something that we can do, and things will change. If you do not do anything to make changes, then you can't expect anything to change. And we can't sit back and say that we live in a peaceful world. Because if there was a peaceful world, then we wouldn't hear about shootings that happen in Chicago. Or we wouldn't feel pressure to pick a side on every issue that comes up in the news. We wouldn't be worried that climate change was going to make life for our children and grandchildren unlivable. If we wanted peace, we have to make change. We have to make disruption. We have to ruffle a few feathers. But I think that John gives us a blueprint and Jesus gives us a method in order to do that. We start with ourselves. We go to what's around us. And then we go to the structures. It's not going to be easy. But if we want peace, peace never comes easy. But if we believe as Jesus believed, it will be worth it. Amen? Amen. The title of my sermon today is Peaceful Disruption. All of the titles, you will see a theme running through Advent, because we are studying in Sunday school the book Holy Disruption by Tracy Dobb. And the idea of the book is that it imagines what it would be like if the only gospel we had of Jesus was the gospel of Mark, which, if you're familiar with Mark, has no birth story of Jesus, has no telling of Jesus as a child or a young adult. In fact, we read the very first verses out of Mark this morning, or rather, Carol read the very first verses out of Mark this morning, and they begin with, not with Jesus, but with a fully grown John the Baptist in the wilderness. And the first time we see Jesus appear is when he comes to be baptized by John. And what's interesting, I think, is that Mark begins with John the Baptist because John the Baptist sort of sets this foundation. John the Baptist is doing this thing that nobody had ever done before. He's doing this really radical, new kind of way of being. And what Jesus does is Jesus sees this and kind of takes what John the Baptist is doing and makes it more accessible and makes it more prevalent throughout the land. And it kind of reminds me of like any kind of great musical form when it first kind of comes onto the scene. There is, you know, it is strange, it is new, it is different, and there's always kind of one pioneer, somebody who is really kind of pushing the envelope and doing things that have never been done before. But then somebody else will come along and kind of see what they're doing and build on it, and not necessarily weaken it, but change it in such a way that it's more prevalent and easier to hang on to. If you don't believe me, you might have heard of a little band known as the Beatles. Anybody ever heard of the Beatles? You guys remember the Beatles, right? They were big once, I hear. Big. They came on and it seemed like they came out of nowhere, right? But the things that they were building on was kind of this form of rhythm and blues and soul that had been prevalent and kind of coming through Liverpool at that time from a lot of different artists and from America. And so what they did is they took that and they kind of polished it and made it accessible, and certainly they made it prevalent throughout. So the thing that I want to focus on today that John was doing is doing a lot of different things, but what he was really trying to do and kind of what it all centers around is this idea of peace, which is the theme of today. Now, you might not think of John as a peaceful person because he's often characterized as this wild man who wore camel's hair and ate locusts and honey and lived in the desert and was just kind of crazy. But the reason that he was doing all of this was that he was trying to build a peace that was greater and more sustainable than the peace people were lacking in the big city and kind of the modern day world at the time. He was creating his own community and his own little utopia. And I think that if we look at the way that John did and then what Jesus takes from that, we can see that this peace was manifested in three different ways. The first was personal, the second was social, and the third was structural. Personal, social, and structural. The first peace was personal. Now, whenever I think of personal peace, it reminds me of this story that I had when I was in high school. And I used to have this little devotional called The Secret Place. If you've ever heard of The Secret Place, it's a daily devotional my church gave out, and so I would read that every day. And one night, before I did my devotional, I was really upset. I was just struggling. I didn't know. I was really having a hard time, and everything felt like really difficult. And I stopped and I prayed and I said, I just need a personal peace. I just know that if I can be okay with myself, I'll be able to be okay with everything else. So what I need is a personal peace. Amen. And then I went into my bedroom and right before bed, I opened up my devotional. And the title of my devotional for that day was Personal Peace. So, I mean, if you don't think God's listening and that God has a sense of humor. But that's kind of what we're getting at here. And with John, he met people on a personal level. He wasn't baptizing people all at once in big groups. Everybody go down and come back up again. No, he was bringing people in individually. Each person came with their own sense of sinfulness, if you call it that, or struggle, or need, or lacking, and wanted something different, wanted to live life in a new way. And for that person, he would individually baptize them. And each individual was personally baptized, all the way up to the point where Jesus was individually and personally baptized by John. And what Jesus takes from this is an attention to the personal. The attention to that people cannot have peace if their needs are not met on an individual level. So that's why he did things like feed them. If these people are hungry, give them something to eat. You give them something to eat. That's why he did things like heal them. They are too sick, too infirm to be able to do anything, to grasp this ideas that he was sharing. He would heal them as a way of showing them what they could do. And Mark is replete with this Jesus casting out demons. This is something that comes up again and again in Mark. And whenever these things of demons come up, it's always kind of tricky because it's unclear what exactly we're talking about. Are we talking about evil spiritual forces like that you might see from a Dante's Inferno? Or are we talking about people who had mental illnesses and were characterized by having demons within them? Or were these just struggles that people were having that they couldn't get past? And they were referring to them as demons. But whatever the case was, they were preventing these people from wholly being who they were, from truly being themselves. And so Jesus takes that away so they can be whole. They can be themselves. And in that sense, I think that we all have demons today. Your demons might even just be the thoughts that you have. The negative things that you tell yourself could be considered your own personal demons. And so, with prayer, with requesting, and with believing, those things also can be taken away so that we can be who we were meant to be, who God sees us as, who Jesus sees us as. And so, before getting any further, Jesus attended to people on a personal level. Now, the second part of the peace that John brought was a social peace. And John did this by creating community, creating communities of support. And Jesus saw this, and And what John did out in the wilderness, Jesus sought to do back in the city, back in the synagogues, back in the places where people were already being social. There is one story of Jesus where he goes into a synagogue. We talked a little bit about it in Sunday school this morning. And somebody within that synagogue had a withered hand. And he looks to the religious leaders and he asks them, what's better to do on the Sabbath? Is it better to do good on the Sabbath or to do evil on the Sabbath? And nobody answered him. Seems like a pretty simple question, right? What should you do? At church, should you do good things at church or should you do awful and horrible, harmful things at church? And the people didn't answer because they didn't want to be judged. They didn't want to condone what they knew Jesus was going to do, which was heal this man. Because healing was a profession. And to do work, do your profession on the Sabbath was forbidden by law. It was only allowed to do in cases of life and death. But Jesus tried to make them reconsider, tried to make them rethink this. And of course, he heals this man. And in our book, what Tracy Dobb makes very clear is that not only does this affect him on a personal level, like we just talked about, but it also restores him on a social level. Because people who were sick, people who were infirmed, people who had different ailments, they were considered to be unclean. And they couldn't participate in the temple rites. They couldn't enter the temple. So they could not be part of that community. And so by healing, Jesus not only restores his peace on a personal level, but also on a social level, restoring that community. And I love this community because this community is all about welcome. And it is all about welcome. Everybody who comes in here is welcome to be here, is embraced. But I think we can even extend that welcome out further. By inviting people in, by letting people know, I know it's church and it's church, but it's not that kind of church. It's the kind of church where you are embraced and you are welcome. But you don't have to be here to practice this kind of welcome. You don't have to be here to create social peace. You can create it where you work. Wherever you see exclusion, wherever you see people being left out, wherever you see people being others or ostracized, and you bring them into the larger community, you include them into the larger group, you are creating a social peace. And the last point The last form of peace that John was making was that of a structural peace. So John goes out into the wilderness. And this is one way of dealing with unjust structures, is just leave them behind. Don't even be a part of it. I know that there are often people, you see different people who are going to live off the grid. They don't want any part of all of the structures that are in place because one person is benefiting by the other person's oppression or vice versa. And they just want to abandon it all. And this is what John did. John looked at these structures and saw how unjust they were. Saw how corrupt Herod and the people in that court were. Spoke up against it. And that eventually was his undoing, which got him arrested and then killed. But Jesus also saw that these structures were unsustainable. And he thought, I don't think that it's good enough for us just to leave them behind, just to go live out off the grid somewhere. We need to make changes within these structures. We need to change the structures themselves so that the structures can bring about peace. Now, the main structure that they were dealing with was this structure of empire, right? There was this little thorn in the side of the Jewish people known as the Roman Empire, which, of course, was much bigger than a thorn in their side. And many felt that the only way that they would be able to have true peace was if they were strong enough to be able to defeat the Roman Empire and to take back what was theirs, which was the land and the temple, Jerusalem, some areas that they had once held. But Jesus saw something greater than that. He said that this fight over this land is going to continue, and indeed, it is still continuing. That if one empire comes in and displaces another, it's just a matter of time before another empire is going to want to come in and displace that one. That these things happened over and over again, from Israel to Assyria to Persian to Greece to Rome. And at no point was there true peace. So Jesus saw that there was a different way. He said that we need to create peace within the structures themselves. That it's not as important who owns the land as to how they are owning this, how their structures are caring for others, how the structures are helping the people in need. It goes back to this Hebrew word that the prophets used, shalom. And shalom is a Hebrew word that we don't really have an English equivalent. Shalom is often most easily and quickly translated as peace, but it is something so much greater than peace. Tracy Dobb, in the book that we're reading, she describes it as this way. She says, shalom included the presence of justice and economic well-being for all. True peace was not possible where there was hunger or neglect, great disparities of wealth, or indifference to human suffering. If all of these things were eradicated, if there was not a disparity of wealth, if the people were cared for, if there was suffering was addressed, and humans were caring for each other, then and only then would there be shalom. So what structures do we see that are unjust? What empires do we see at play in our world? Be they political or economic or social. Think of Jesus in the temple upsetting all of those who were trying to cheat others out of their money, trying to take advantage of people who were in a really difficult situation. A lot of people had come from far away places and needed a sacrifice to give at the temple. And so the people were all willing to sell them this dove or animal that they needed to sacrifice, but it was going to cost them. Exploiting people for their needs is not something that we can blame on modern day capitalism or consumerism. It is something that has happened for millennia. And as we come into this time of Christmas and gifts, and I'm not opposed to gifts. I'm not opposed to gift giving. I give a lot of gifts myself. But I really thought about gifts. And I thought about, what is it that people really need? I'm not talking about the kids, but people that you give gifts to, what is it that they really need? And one of the things that I hear people really need is time and space and quiet. I wonder if there's a way to give people that for Christmas. My dad is not much of a materials person. He's the kind of person who would buy a pair of jeans and then expect to wear that pair of jeans for the rest of his life. I remember every time he went and bought a new pair of jeans, he would buy them like two at a time. And every time he went and bought two new pairs of jeans, it was like a big deal. Well, his old jeans have these holes in them and they're ripped through, so he's going to go buy some new jeans. And it was like, oh my goodness, it's an event. My mom often will talk about how my father would just go into a cabinet one day and just throw everything out of the cabinet. We don't use anything in here, and just throw it all out. But I do remember one time I was looking for something in his office, envelope or something I needed, and I opened up one of his drawers. And in that drawer was every card I had ever made him as a kid or sent him from college. He kept every single one, and they were not good. Oftentimes, I was a smart alecky kid, and I would try to find the most like silliest birthday card I could find when I buy one. And when I made them, they were even worse. But he kept the gifts, and it's not because the gifts were that great. But it's because it was that he knew that I was thinking of him. And he would look at those gifts, he would look at those cards from time to time and know that I was thinking of him, and then he would then be thinking of me, thinking of him. And I think that that is really all that we can ask for a gift. So all of these things take disruption, right? Leaving things just as they are, leaving the status quo just as it is not something that we can do, and things will change. If you do not do anything to make changes, then you can't expect anything to change. And we can't sit back and say that we live in a peaceful world. Because if there was a peaceful world, then we wouldn't hear about shootings that happen in Chicago. Or we wouldn't feel pressure to pick a side on every issue that comes up in the news. We wouldn't be worried that climate change was going to make life for our children and grandchildren unlivable. If we wanted peace, we have to make change. We have to make disruption. We have to ruffle a few feathers. But I think that John gives us a blueprint and Jesus gives us a method in order to do that. We start with ourselves. We go to what's around us. And then we go to the structures. It's not going to be easy. But if we want peace, peace never comes easy. But if we believe as Jesus believed, it will be worth it. Amen? Amen. Amen.